You know, today on Geek Speak, we're doing a celebration show. That's right. Everyone is going to celebrate today, and we'll list that out in just a second. It is Saturday, September 4th, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news and celebrations, baby. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed on Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, the celebrations include Alex Slius gets a birthday, woohoo. Al Luckow's birthday. Ben Jaffe has a job. No, just kidding. And Lindsay has a shirt. Congratulations,
yay!
Lindsay.
Thanks.
And for my celebration today, first, I guess I'll do a little more formal introduction to Lindsay Lonnie. She is a software systems analyst extraordinaire, as I recall, right?
Thank you, yes.
And Ben Jaffe, a freelance media guy and Stanford instructor.
Morning.
We have Al Luckow, a new media architect.
Hello, everybody.
And happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
And Alex Slius, application security analyst, Southern California correspondent, who is in the air room with us. Thank you.
Good morning, Lyle.
And happy birthday to you, too, sir.
Thank you very
and
much.
And my celebration will be the removal of my brace.
Woo-hoo.
So we'll take my brace off.
Wow. He's taking his back brace off from his injury, his Madrone injury.
Okay. Oh, look at that.
Break backing injury.
How long's that been on?
April 21st. I got it on.
It's official.
I don't feel like a cyborg anymore as much.
Wow.
I actually am going to be weaning it off the next 2 months, and then it'll be gone for good. So that's a kind of a celebration today. And Miles Elam, software engineer and political junkie, who's not in the room, but I know he'll be here soon, because today is his 10-year anniversary of GeekSpeak, and he can't miss it today, right?
Yeah. He's still a slacker.
He is a slacker,
he's
I guess,
sleeping
today.
In.
He's proven his slackerness. But in any case, we are also celebrating the 10-year anniversary of GeekSpeak's production of Miles and me and other geeks taking over from the wonderful people at Cruzeo, who started the show 12 years ago. I took over 10 years ago, and to celebrate that, we're going downtown to have ice cream after the show at noon, and I'll be giving out more information in just a second about that. So please join us. Get a free T-shirt, which I think a few of us are wearing today. I'm wearing one, and Lindsay's got one now. Woo. And get a free T-shirt, get some ice cream, and celebrate with us at noon downtown. And, of course, I don't have the ice cream address in front of me, but I will momentarily. First, let's talk about what you're doing, Ben, this week. And we're doing one more celebration and giveaway, right?
Yes, indeed. So I am actually doing all of the media for this show called Here After Here. Oh, Miles just walked into the room. Here After Here, which is a show about death, life. It's a very interesting show. Tandy Beal.
It's more interesting than it sounds.
Much more.
It's fun, but also intense.
It definitely. It explores the issue of what happens after death. So it's a very interesting show to work on, especially because in theater, you're with this material constantly throughout tech and throughout all your dress rehearsals and everything like that. And, you know, preparation every single show. So very interesting show. We're giving away a ticket to it. So if you pay attention in the first half,
During the middle break, our geek bit will be giving away a ticket. You just have to call in. Rick will take the call. So pay attention to our news story. We'll be quizzing you on one of them, and you can get a free ticket to Tandy Beal and Company's show Here After Here Friday. This coming Friday or next Friday?
Yeah, this is Friday at 7:30. Not yesterday, but 6 days from now.
Darn.
This upcoming Friday. And it runs Friday and Saturday at 7:30 at the Caprio Crocker Theater, and as well as a Sunday matinee at, I think, 3 p.m. So
okay, and so after the show today at noon, meet all the geeks, get a free T-shirt, get some ice cream over at the Ice Creamery, the Penny Ice Creamery. And that is on 913 Cedar Street in downtown Santa Cruz. And do pay attention to our news so you can get a free ticket to Here After Here.
Ice cream for a penny? Really?
I think it's called the Penny Ice Creamery because, you know, ice cream used to be a penny, but I'm not sure. We'll have to ask Zach.
What is that next to, that place?
100 pennies.
You know, I haven't been down there to check it out, but I think it's right across the street from Gabriella's.
Oh, right. Okay. So kind of where Bratz was, the haircutting place?
Yes, right. I think it's right next to, it's either in that location or, yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
All right, so for those visually oriented, that's the location.
We should figure that out pretty soon.
We'll do some. It doesn't seem to be a Google Street View at that location, unfortunately. But I'll give more information as we go. But let's go ahead and do the next news story. And it's been a while. So, well, first off, Miles Elam's here. Hi.
Hi.
Happy 10-year anniversary of Geekscape.
Yes, I can't believe I was late.
And you've never been late, actually.
No, never.
The start of a new era.
Never in my life before have I been late to something.
I didn't believe you.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, since you're here, you did get the news all worked out. I'm curious about Burning Man, which is happening right now, as I believe.
Yes.
What's going on new at Burning Man this year?
There's going to be cell phone coverage, or there is cell phone coverage there. Which, you know,
it's in the middle of the desert. Though.
Yes, you're out in the middle of basically nowhere. The whole point of Burning Man was that you're out in the middle of nowhere and you're not going to be interrupted by anyone or disturbing anyone because there's no one else around. What they're doing is, in addition to internet coverage, which they've done before at previous shows, either through satellite, you know, long distance wireless, that type of thing, they are using a piece of software, open source software, known as OpenBTS, and it takes that internet connection and retransmits as a GSM signal that cell phones can understand.
Okay. So you're basically making, but what do the phones, do you have to register your phone or something? So it's outside the realm of the carrier?
Well, it's using OpenBTS, which I think I actually read about that too. That's like having your own cell phone company. It's hard to do, though. You got to be kind of smart. So it's not like you can go out and get this open source stuff.
Well, but are they going to have real phone numbers, or is it going to be outside the phone network? Are these things going to be ringing with, you know, numbers like 37 and stuff like that?
That's a fine question, because I actually don't have that on there. They're hooking it up basically with the PBX system Asterix, another open source setup that a lot of companies use for their phone tracking, you know, when someone calls in, being able to route calls.
The phone distribution system in the office, right?
Right. And for a lot cheaper, and that was something that was brought in by many companies because it was so much cheaper than having the phone company do 20 billion lines.
So it's the middle of the desert. There's dust everywhere. It's a lot of heat. You've got to bring your own water in, but you've got cell phone coverage.
And this cell phone coverage is powered by solar.
Very cool. Nice. And now I want to call somebody that's on the playa right now, because I know like 7 people that are there. See if the phones work. All right. Well, thank you, Miles, for the information.
Yeah, it's actually very similar to what another piece of technology that we've forgotten to talk about in the past, which was if you don't have AT&T cell phone coverage, you can get a microcell 3G is what they call it.
You're using one of those at home, right?
And I have one of those at home.
And that basically takes your Wi-Fi coverage or network coverage and translates it to a cell spot, but only for registered phones, only for your phone.
Right, up to 10 phones and up to 4 conversations.
And AT&T charges you for that too?
It doesn't have a recurring fee, but the box costs money.
And they're not like extending their network because it only works for you, but it is a really great thing if you can get cable or DSL at your home, then you can get your cell phone.
Right. So it's me paying $150 to improve their network.
But only for you.
But you know, if you're in your house and you want to use your cell phone and you're like, well, I just don't have AT&T coverage, you just get one of these boxes and they're cheap.
Cool.
And stick it to your internet thing and now you have cell phone coverage in your house.
But of course you have to have network coverage too.
Well, you got to have internet, yeah.
So if I go by your house, Miles, can I make a phone call on AT&T's network through your Wi-Fi?
If I register your phone number with my box, yes.
If you had an AT&T phone, but you don't.
Ah, boiled again.
Darn Android. All right. Miles, thank you very much for that. Now, in the last, I think, couple years that Al's been doing this, he's focused on the crazy USB of the week, of course, but also on this wonderful collection of robot stories, because you happen to love robots.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my favorite stories of yours is the Big Dog story, which is that crazy robotic dog that carries backpacks for soldiers. But there's another military one, which had to do with a robot that could consume organic material and power itself that way. And we talked about the corpse-eating robot. It's really, I think that's the name of the show, too, if you want to go listen to that episode of Geekspeak. Of course, the last 10 years of Geekspeak aren't online, but since 2002, we've had them online and podcasting. So you can go back and listen to thousands of hours of Geekspeak if you want. I don't know why you'd want to, but they're there. But you got an interesting robot story for us today?
Well, I try to think of as interesting a story as I can. So,
would you just think up these stories?
Well, I find them.
Don't tell them the secret.
Shh. I find them. Anyway, this one is about a pooping robot.
Good.
Which I
good.
Thought is everybody's what they want to hear about. They woke up and they're gonna. Anyway, there's a.
Well, what is Saturday?
Yes, I mean, yeah, you sleep late. All right. So a lot of robots now, what they're trying to design, you know, self-sustaining type of robot, and to do that, they've done different things, you know, solar, but now they're doing the robots so that they can ingest, you know, biomass, any kind of like organic material. But then, you know, you have to think about, well, now that it's used this material, it has the same issues that everything else does that uses biomass. What am I going to do with this stuff after I'm done with it? Well, the researchers at Bristol Robotics Lab in England developed an artificial gut for self-sustaining robots so they can excrete these wastes, because otherwise they just kind of sit there. And this thing's called the Echobot 3, and it can survive. I don't know when I say live, but it's on for 7 days, feeding and watering itself. Without any kind of human intervention, so it's kind of like living.
Where does it do this? Like out in the woods, or?
Well, it looks to me like it's on some sort of a track, and you know, the robot, quite frankly, doesn't do a whole heck of a lot. But it looks like it moves something back and forth, or I don't know what it does. They don't really go into what it's actually doing.
Taro Gami has to rewrite her book, Everybody Poops, to add a robot.
Oh, right, yes, that's a good book, by the way.
It's a good book.
If you've got kids,
right.
You know. Anyway, this thing is fed this nutrient-rich solution of minerals, salts, and vitamins, and it goes into 48 microbial fuel cells. And then these metabolize and give off hydrogen atoms, which then generate the electrical current that it uses. And the waste is recycled, and it's used as much as it can until it's ready to be excreted. So then it's excreted, and apparently it's some really, really nasty stuff.
Are we talking meconium nasty here?
Yeah, I mean, it's really bad. It does have its own litter box, and it will go in the litter box. It doesn't just like, no. It's not like a bird where it just goes wherever it happens to be standing.
Wait, why don't they program it to go to the restroom, you know, to the toilet?
It's concerned. It has a toilet, and it knows to go there and then get rid of this really, I guess it's just really,
but if
really
it misses,
bad.
Do you have to get a steel pipe to hit its nose?
Robots never make those mistakes.
Yeah, it's precision pooping, but it does get it in there. And you know, they're not like rabbit pellets. I mean, we're talking. Some people are saying, well, maybe we should call this more diarrhea bot instead of robot.
I see, I didn't know that, but thank you.
But yeah, it's so. But they had plans to give it a healthier, more heartier diet to kind of beef it up with more protein and fiber enriched things. Which by that they mean they want to feed it flies.
Mm-hmm. They want to fight. Yeah, right.
So, but yeah, it's a.
Can they teach it to catch its own food?
That would be nice to be able to catch its own food.
I hear humans are slow. So
yeah, I mean, it's an interesting step.
You've heard it first here on Geek Speak. 10 years of classic radio here. classy
yeah,
radio.
Just
classy.
Pooping robots, but it's a robot robots. With a digestive system.
Yeah,
it
full
eats
digestive
things.
System. Disturbing. Thank you, Al. And I'm sure in a little bit, Al will have another wonderful story about.
Oh, yeah.
Pooping robots. And Ben's going to be talking about an internet kill switch potentially. And Alex unreels a little bit of an interesting new camera solution. But first, let's talk about Toshiba's big mistake. Lindsay, hi.
Hi. So Toshiba's recalling 41,000 notebook computers because there's a risk of overheating and burning users. Yeah, exactly. The recalled models were sold between August 2009 through August 2010, and they're the lower-end models, about $600 to $800. It's the Satellite T135 and T135D and Pro T130.
And so what happens?
Basically, they've received about 129 reports of the computers overheating and deforming the plastic casing around the AC adapter plug. So of those, there were 2 reports of minor burns and 2 reports of minor property damage. So it's not...
Right, but yeah. It could easily turn into a fire and take
exactly.
out a whole building. So you say that the AC connector, does this laptop have a power supply internally that uses AC? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
Strange, because normally the AC goes right to a power block, a little distribution block, which
right.
I like to call a wall wart. And then from there is a thin, 12-volt solution.
Yeah, these are smaller...
Yeah. Yeah, that thing might be catching on fire.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, basically...
Dangerous. So if you have a new Toshiba laptop, go up to Toshiba and make sure that it's not one of the recalled lists.
And they're melting.
Right.
So it's like a Salvador Dali laptop kind of.
Exactly.
Who was the vendor that actually had the laptops that were actually catching on fire before?
I can't remember.
Actually, there were several of them. It was the battery manufacturers that were having it. It was a Sony battery. Sony branded, but multiple vendors that were... producing it.
Yeah, basically what they're saying is you can go up to their website and download a new BIOS and install it, and then it will detect if there's an overheat and shut down the power and warn you to contact Toshiba.
So right now you can do that, and then if you continue to have the problem, you can get it returned and they'll fix it.
They'll fix it, yeah.
I love BIOS updates.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll make this safe. It doesn't run anymore. Congratulations.
Contact Toshiba. Phone home.
Thank you, Lindsay, very much for that. Alex, tell us about new camera technology.
All right, camera technology. Well, Canon has just recently unveiled a new camera sensor, or at least their dev work on the sensor, for a 120-megapixel camera sensor. That's big. That's really big.
What's a normal, like, what's the normal 6-megapixel?
Well, their largest prosumer SLR is their 5D Mark II, which I believe is 21 megapixels.
That's a lot.
I think it's 21 or 25. I always get Nikon's high-end versus Canon's confused. But yeah, that's a lot right there. I mean, heck, mine is, what, 15, and that's still
mine's
huge.
Mine's 6 megapixel, and I'm very happy with it. I do large prints and everything. I mean, why do you need so much?
We won't be seeing this in consumer cameras anytime soon. This is really for commercial high-end applications.
Alex, you shoot in RAW, right?
Actually, I don't shoot in RAW that often.
Really?
I tend to configure my, you know, use the camera itself to,
I shoot
to get
in RAW
it right.
All the time.
I always shoot in RAW.
Yeah, my hard drive space format started filling up. I stopped doing that.
Al, you've got a D90, right?
I've got a D90, a D300, a D70.
So the D90, do you know the resolution, the megapixels on that?
10 or 12?
10 or 12, yeah. I think it's 12. Yeah.
It's really, you know, I mean, megapixels.
It's all about the lens.
You know, it's all in the glass. I mean, if you have a good 6-megapixel camera and it's got a nice lens on it, you're better off than having a 12-megapixel camera with a crummy lens.
Of course, with this sensor, you could potentially do a dome type of lens and get a 360 type of shot and still have the resolution that beats my camera, for example.
Yeah, but I mean, I think also with having the higher resolution, while the optics are definitely key, I think, for depending on your application, for what you want to use it for, these are targeted for commercial. You know, people who are doing large posters that are 8 feet, or sometimes have a print that's going up on the side of a building.
Right. Sure.
So, I mean, I could see like a lot of the large format. There are some stock companies that won't even accept a photographer unless they're shooting 25 megapixels or above.
Yeah.
And you've got like some of the large format cameras now that are like 20, 30, 40 grand. Just to get them, but they shoot in the 30, 40 megapixel range.
Yeah, something occurred to me earlier this week, and I wanted to talk with the photographers in the room about this, is right now with the consumer-grade stuff like the iPhone, where you're just, it's a point-and-shoot, you don't have much in the way, like, there's no possibility for RAW with an iPhone.
Well, you know, they just added that feature, the dynamic range. Did you see that in the Apple Keynote?
I saw the dynamic range, but it's still not a RAW, though, right?
It's not a RAW, but actually dynamic range is using a series of images to create the best.
Are you talking about the HDR?
HDR, yeah.
Anyway, but the point that I wanted to make, though, was right now the iPhone and some other cameras have a digital zoom. What I wonder is if you have that high megapixel count, even if normally, like, for example, could you see a possibility where you have an iPhone that has a 20-megapixel camera, you know, CCD in it, and the optics are, you know, very good, but the space on the device is too small for it to handle that, so instead you just take a portion of the receptor,
right.
And then if you want to do a digital zoom, it takes a wider area, like further away.
When you do a digital zoom on a camera, what's happening is you're actually just ignoring a whole bunch of the image outside of a certain area and enlarging the image of a small segment. So you actually get less resolution of your final picture, and that's why the digital zooms normally have a more grainy quality to them. What Miles is saying is if you have a really big, beefy sensor, it doesn't matter because you've got so much resolution to play with, you could use it as a zoom.
Yeah. Right, the idea that you would always have the same size of image, but it's just a question of how far, you know,
right.
You go closer. Sorry, I wasn't speaking as clearly as I could have.
Like digital zoom much more viable.
Yeah.
I mean, for most cameras now, I turn that off.
Digital zooms are silly. I mean, there's no point.
You do it after a Photoshop.
Well, right now they're silly because there's only one resolution for the optics or for the receptor.
The low end and medium end consumer camcorders, digital zoom is very, very silly because you end up capturing the same size as you're going to output. If you take that image and you zoom in maybe four times or something like that, you're not actually getting a better image at all. You're just ignoring most of your image and blowing up the center.
The one thing that's convenient about those, if you're too far away from something and you want to zoom in, you can't get closer and your camera can't do it. You're doing it right then. Mm-hmm. You're doing the zoom right then.
It makes a little more sense for video.
It does. Yeah. But it's also because it's harder to deal with it after the fact. But also, if you know you're not going to care about the rest of that picture, why, you're saving a step of going into Photoshop and doing the zoom later. Yeah. And that's kind of why, like, Alex doesn't shoot RAW, right? He just sets his camera up correctly right off the bat and hopes the JPEG will look nice.
I do my white balance. I mean, I've actually gotten to know my camera well where I actually do the white balance. I do actually even have manual adjustments over the custom white balance because I don't like how my camera actually defaults to it. So I actually manually shift it. So I do that sort of stuff with adjusting it so that when it produces the JPEG, it's really close to what I would do myself.
Yeah.
All
right.
Which camera are you using?
I'm actually just using the Rebel T1i, the Canon. Just to touch on part B of this, my story there, I actually also have another sensor out that's 20 centimeter CMOS. It is the world's largest sensor, CMOS sensor.
It's big.
There are people who are, commenting, oh, we ought to retrofit the Hubble telescope or something. But, one of the key things for this one is they're able to actually do 60 frames per second with video at 0.3 lux, which is extremely low light.
Do you know what the resolution of that thing is?
I actually couldn't find any of those specific details, but I'm guessing it's big.
Yeah, what we're talking, well, it might not be.
Well, you mentioned their current sensors are 3.5 centimeters.
Right, but if it's more
like
sensitive to light, the actual cells are probably larger. The photo receiving cells are probably larger.
It can be. That's probably part of this because one of their key things they're shooting for is the low light.
Ability. Yeah. As the person who isn't into photography and needs to be the advocate for the other people that are kind of going, wait, how? What?
What now? Who? Where?
Lux. I was always under the impression that was a measurement of a number, a certain. Oh, I'm sorry. It's a candle over a certain period of time.
I don't know
over
what
a certain
lux
space.
Is. Alex, you said it. You
over a certain distance, rather.
Ben is looking it up right now.
And
it's the SI unit of illuminance and luminance emittance.
Yes, that explains it.
Thank you so much.
Right. So I guess what I'm wondering is 0.3 lux. Is it just because a lux was some given
probably
item? I was always in the impression that it was based upon a certain count of photons that were coming in, but I guess
it's analogous to the
lumens.
Radiometric unit watts per square meter, but with the power at each wavelength weighed accordingly to the luminosity function.
Oh, well, that's
standard model of human visual brightness perception.
So somebody figured it out.
It's the amount of visual
okay.
Electromagnetic radiation.
It's kind of an emulation of the way we see, and then taking that kind of a curve over the EM spectrum and mapping that to a very rigid equation kind of thing. So it's confusing.
There's a whole bunch of geeks out there just wincing every time we talk about this because we don't know what we're talking about.
Okay, if I'm wondering if I'm getting this straight, I'm just saying that I am completely ignorant on this, so I'm just going to be making a stab at it, that one lux would be about the lower range of what human vision could catch, the average human vision.
Okay, here we go.
Full moon overcast at tropical... full moon overhead at tropical latitudes.
Is one lux.
One lux.
Oh, that's bright.
And we're talking about 0.3 lux. That's a full moon on a clear night. I don't know what the difference is between the two. This is Wikipedia, by the way.
Wait, I love that it says full moon overhead at tropical latitudes. But it doesn't say it's not a clear night.
Well, the other thing is, I assume this is a logarithmic scale, too, because that's how
see. Hey, a family living room is 50 lux.
Yeah, but then how do you take that?
A hallway or bathroom is 80 lux. A very dark, overcast
Wait,
day
I'm sorry.
Is
a family,
I don't know.
Wait, so a family living room is 50 lux? It kind of sounds like...
Wikipedia sucks.
Welcome to Geekspeak, where we read articles from Wikipedia.
10 years of great content.
No, I was just thinking, if a family room is 50 lux, I mean, that doesn't say anything. That's like saying a room temperature is the temperature of a room.
All right, let's move on because we don't know what we're talking about. thank you very much for that wonderful story about large cameras, sensors. Ben, the internet's going to die soon?
What? Oh God, that was my punchline.
Oh, sorry.
That was so. Yeah. So we've already talked quite a bit on Geek Speak about app kill switches for phones. You know, like should Apple or Google or whoever, T-Mobile, be able to kill an application if it's gone rogue, as they say?
Is it a public good or is it not?
Yeah. Exactly. And then we also have talked a bit about the phone kill switch, right? What if a phone goes crazy and starts spamming everyone? You know, should T-Mobile, for example, or AT&T be able to shut it down remotely to protect its network? Well, the news article I stumbled across is talking about an intranet kill switch, presumably for the United States. And this is a bill that's actually trying to be, well, if you can say a bill is trying to pass, the bill is trying to pass as a rider on something like the Defense Authorization Act, as a rider on that bill. Now, the pro of this, the proponents are saying, you know, we need an internet kill switch to, for example, protect the power grid and the banking grids and the water systems. This particular article, which I found this morning on a relatively liberal seeming site, it says experts have said that the power and water grids are not connected to the internet, so I'm not sure how accurate that necessarily is. But what's interesting to me is just to kind of pose that question, is that a violation for the U.S. government to cut off the internet in a time of emergency or in a time of, you know, need or something like that?
I mean, I get the idea. If you had thousands of home computers infected and they were doing a denial of service attack on something really important, to be able to kill those machines, disconnect them from the network. But it sounds like it's relatively vague right now because it's in a legislation.
Yeah, that's like killing the patients because they're infected with something really bad and really contagious in some senses. Well, then again, it's probably easier to contain real patients than it would be to find and track down and contain computers. So
right, September 11, 2001, phone access was down for a good portion of the East Coast.
Was it shut down though, or was it overwhelmed?
In general, during emergency, you do have shutdown of the phone system. That way, emergency calls can get routed, and it's not clogged by the general public.
Well, how do you decide what network traffic is emergency traffic and what network traffic is not?
Those would be called routing tables.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, for example, Twitter, just as an example of a gray zone, right? Twitter is proven invaluable in emergencies for disseminating information that can be useful, but it's also extremely banal in a lot of cases, right? So, like, what content on Twitter, for example, would be useful and what wouldn't be? What about Facebook as a mechanism for disseminating information in an emergency? You know, like,
right? Me playing,
who decides what gets shut down?
Yeah, I'm playing devil's advocate in this case.
Yeah, of course.
But Twitter, for example, with the Haitian earthquake, mm-hmm. was the emergency was not technology related. The emergency was earthquake related. Therefore, you had something else like the technology acting as a crutch, if you will, something to pick up the slack. If the emergency were internet based, it's a different animal.
Internet based emergencies?
Yeah, I mean, if like he was saying, if you have something, I have mixed feelings about this, just because we've had things like Code Red around, when was that, 2000, 1999, something like that, where you had a large number of computers totally slowing down the internet, or the Morris worm back in the late 80s that completely took down the internet. The question is, was it the correct thing to do to leave that up and running, or rather leave it in that hobbled state for so long? Or do you want a kill switch and then be able to target the response a little bit better? That's the open question you have.
Well, yeah.
And that's a good open question. Let's go ahead and
let's leave that open then.
GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses, tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specializes in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBTech.com. Also over 10 years, GeekSpeak. That's right. We've been doing GeekSpeak for over 10 years, and we're celebrating today. Come down, get some free ice cream, and get a t-shirt, a GeekSpeak t-shirt, and meet all the geeks. Today, right at 12 o'clock, a little bit after GeekSpeak, we, for the Geek Bit today, we're going to go ahead and give away a ticket to Hear After Hear. So of the first news stories, I was just flipping through them, and I think the one that we're going to ask about, which means you need to call in, call 476-2800, 1-800-655-5877. If you know the amount of megapixels that Alex's story is about, the large megapixel count of the new Canon sensor, how many megapixels was that? And if you know the answer to that, you can go to Hear After Hear and take pictures the whole time if you want. The phone numbers again are 476-2800 or 1-800-655-5877. And Alex, would you go ahead and put into our chat so that Rip knows the answer?
I got it.
Okay, good. The ice cream social that we're going to be doing after Geek Speak is downtown, and it is, wow, our website is really dead right now, isn't it?
It's that kill switch. Somebody hit that kill switch.
We're at 913 Cedar Street at the Penny Ice Creamery. And 913 Cedar Street is, I'm zooming in to see what it's between and around. But you're going to get free ice cream. We're giving away 20 scoops of ice cream and at least 20 t-shirts. I'm sure if you don't get some ice cream, you'll get a t-shirt. I think that's the way we're going to be doing it today.
If you go to, don't get a t-shirt.
You were saying our website's down? No, it's not.
Well, not down. I was trying to find the link to the... I got it. Our website's not down right now? It normally is.
Geeks with a downed website.
It's almost...
What kind of operation is this?
Yeah, this is something... I was just saying that Geeks with a down website, like Geek Speak with a down website, is something Alanis Morissette might call ironic.
Yeah.
Nice.
I like that you said it's not ironic, but Alanis Morissette might say it's ironic. Yeah. That's very clever.
That whole song
on Cedar Street between Locust and Church Streets. So if you were at Cooper Street and you were walking straight, you'd of course run into the theater. But if you could jump over the theater, right there is the ice creamery. And it's the Penny Ice Creamery in Santa Cruz. They're giving away 20 scoops for Geek Speak listeners. Show up at noon. That's when they open. We'll be there, too. We'll all be wearing Geek Speak shirts, except for Alex.
Yeah, where is mine?
He's got a DEF CON shirt, though.
Okay, good. And Miles, what are you wearing? Miles is too hip for this.
I'm through with being cool.
Oh, nice.
I was about to say that, too.
Oh, sure you were.
I thought, no, that's too low of a joke.
All right,
for
did
me
we get a call yet for somebody that knows the answer to the amount of megapixels?
Yes.
Oh, great. And is she on the phone, Rick? Oh, she's not on the phone. Well, looks like Lori from Santa Cruz got the right answer. And Alex, what was the amount of megapixels for that?
That would be 120 megapixels.
So, Lori, we'll see you at Hear After Hear, and you'll be getting the information from Rick. You are listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are Miles Elam. Say hi, Miles.
Good morning.
Al Luckow.
Hello, everybody.
Alex Slius.
Good morning.
Lindsay Lonnie.
Good morning.
And Ben Jaffe.
Hello.
And you didn't say good morning.
Good morning.
Very good. My name is Lyle Troxell. We are not taking your calls because we have too much news to cover today. But I do want to let you know that GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Suicide Prevention Service of the Central Coast, announcing their annual Coast Trail Walk, Monterey to Pacific Grove and back, Saturday, September 18th. 9 a.m. registration. The walk begins at 10 a.m. Information at coastaltrailwalk.org. You can find out all the information about today's show at geekspeak.org, especially when the website is vacking. I think our next news story is actually for Mr. Miles Elam. What's going on that continent? All right, actually, it's not a continent story. Well, India.
What kind of a segue is that?
I'm going to edit the podcast.
That's the worst segue.
Let me try this again. So, Ben talked about the internet kill switch. What's going on in India?
Last week, we covered the story of BlackBerry in India and the fact that the Indian government wanted access to the keys, basically a backdoor past BlackBerry's security measures, their cryptography on their devices. And it looks like they also want access to Google, Skype, and virtual private network data as well. So, they're casting their net a bit wider than just BlackBerry.
So, yeah, that makes sense. They did BlackBerry first, and now they're doing it for everybody.
Yeah, which doesn't really surprise that many people. Once you go after BlackBerry, it's like, well, wait, they have all these other vendors.
Miles, you're relatively keen on this idea. Can you make the argument for the Indian government of why they want to do this?
Can I make the argument about why they want to do it or whether it's a good idea?
No, make their argument. They're saying, what we want to do, all you vendors that do network community and do communication in our country, we want to be able to, if we want, look at the information that's being transmitted. We want to get past your security easily.
There is criminal,
please give us keys.
There
to
is
that.
Criminal activity out there. There needs to be regulation. And with encrypted communication lines, there is no ability to listen in, even if you have rightful cause. So unlike a phone where you have a wiretap and you can get a court order and then listen in, there is no equivalent in a virtual private network or an encrypted VoIP call, because they are using a type of cryptography that if all the supercomputers all work together, you'd still would, you know, with sufficient cryptography that's available today, you could wait for the sun to die out and you still wouldn't be able to crack that message. So that's the argument there.
So it's about criminal activity.
That's the purported reason, yes. Hmm. At the same time, if you weaken the security so that someone can listen in, you weakened it for everyone, and then cryptography is largely ineffectual. It's a false sense of security.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Miles Elam. Al, got any more robot stories for us?
Well, I have one that is sort of a robot. They're basically nanorobots, and there's some fun-sounding words to describe them. They're a type of bacteria called magnetotactic, and they have structures inside them called magnetosomes. And what you can do with these like little nano robot bacteria things is you can control them using magnetic fields. So that's exactly what was done at the nanorobotics laboratory of the École Polytechnique in Montreal. This guy, Professor Sylvain Martel, he made this video, and we'll have this link up on geekspeak.org, where he took a swarm of about 5,000 flagellated bacteria, and he directed them to build a step pyramid out of little tiny microscopic poly blocks, epoxy
Whoa.
Bricks.
Whoa.
So, and there's a little video of this swarm of bacteria that's like picking up these little bricks and building this this little pyramid, and it's kind of cool. I mean, they're doing it at a you know, a micro level, and you can see this whole swarm, and so basically it's a bacteria robot working at a nano scale.
Is the swarm picking up one brick at a time?
Yes, it's picking up one brick at a time. You can kind of see, I'm showing Lyle, it's radio again, but it's basically
you guys should see it's, this.
It's yeah. I mean, it's
that's pretty
it's
cool.
Pretty cool. It's a swarm of bacteria being controlled by magnetic forces. It's a specific type, but it's, I mean, you'd be able to build stuff by controlling these bacteria. I mean,
it's very cool.
It's a really neat little thing, and that it's a robot story.
It's a micro robot story.
It's a micro robot story.
As we get to the nanoscale,
tiny ones.
Yeah, as you get to the nanoscale, you're not going to be working with motors and gears anymore. You're going to be working with biological systems, and mm-hmm. this is just that next step.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really neat thing. I don't know what they'll build with this. Little pyramids all over the place.
Micro pyramids.
Yeah.
And all the bacteria will say, who built these? Aliens?
Yeah. And it's so done with
right.
humans.
How could they have lifted this?
All right. We just...
I, for one, welcome my flagellated bacteria nanomachine overlords.
What does flagellated bacteria mean?
Well,
that
means they have, it means they have a flagellum.
The little wiggly
tail. They have the tail that allows for locomotion.
Okay, good.
That's a great definition.
All right. So Lori did win our tickets to Here After Here, and I just want to mention Here After Here is a self-guided tour of an eternity. I saw 2 years ago the production of it. It's new every year. It's an amazing kind of piece of multimedia theater. It's at the Cabrillo Crocker Theater. That's the new theater at Cabrillo College. And it's a Friday and Saturday at 7:30 and Sunday matinee at 3. And you can find more information at hereafterhere.com. And, of course, all the information about that will be up on geekspeak.org. And let's go ahead and go on to Alex. Just a quick mention about the English language, please.
We're no longer printing it.
No.
No. Actually, the Oxford English Dictionary could go out of print thanks to the internet.
Wow.
They're looking at having just an online-only version. And I don't
That's
know,
just sad.
Another reason for an internet
culture. Wait, hold on, hold on.
That's right.
That's just sad. Raise your hand. No one can see this here, but raise your hand if you have ever owned an unabridged English dictionary.
An unabridged? Like an unabridged one?
Yes.
No, it's huge.
What do you mean? Right, exactly. That's what they're talking about not printing anymore. The complete unabridged
Okay.
That's the one that needs its own podium at the library. Mm-hmm. They build their own little thing for it, and you can walk up to it, and it's gigantic, and only 75 pounds.
Okay. Who here wouldn't want that book?
I do want that book. I just don't want to lift it. So I'd much rather have it in electronic form.
All right, being the paranoid security guy that I am.
Yeah. What if the internet kill switch happens and no one can look up spontaneously?
What if all the spammers?
Think about, there's a lot of things we take for granted, when it comes to physical books that they're hard to be tampered with. I mean, there's a lot that goes on when you become purely virtual, and it's a little odd to have that kind of stuff.
You presume though that that I'm advocating only internet based. I'm talking about just electronic based.
Oh, so like CDs.
I can download it to my iPhone and have it there in my flash memory so that it's not volatile,
assuming it's downloadable.
Until you get a virus from Urban Dictionary that modifies all the words.
What happens to all the Scrabble
digital
users out
and
there?
Can be modified.
Sad state.
Well, the Scrabble users have their own dictionary because English isn't good enough for them. But I'm worried, like, if we put all of English on the internet, then all the spammers might actually learn to speak it well. And then spam messages will be harder to root out. And,
that's true.
You won't get, I am Nigerian prince is give money.
Wait, let me put it this way. How many of you still use a phone book on a regular basis?
Every now and then.
That's what I thought.
And, Bubba was doing some cleanup at Maggie,
use a phone book for what?
For looking up businesses.
Well, I use it for holding things up and making things higher.
Opening doors.
Exactly. I hold doors open
monitor
with them.
Monitor stands.
There's a lot of uses for the phone book.
Taking out Black Widows.
Taking out bugs.
When I need to find a plumber, I go on Google and I look up Plumber Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm. Here you go, all you plumbers.
But I think that's a little
different.
That's volatile information that constantly changes, as opposed to a primary reference for the English language.
As opposed to a nice staple.
Right, because the English language doesn't ever change.
True, but still a reference point for something like that, as opposed to something that changes as dynamically as business address listings.
Oh, if only we had something like revision control in the technical world, that would be awesome. We could find like
this
a point in time.
This is more sarcasm from Miles Ealing.
Yeah, because those can't be corrupted.
Wow. Geek argument. How fun. Moving on.
What show am I on anyway?
Would you like another plate of sarcasm? I'm dishing it up really thick.
Lindsay, can you get us out of this mess and talk about Facebook?
I'll try. This is quick, and it's kind of rumorish, but Facebook's coming out with a new option, a new button underneath the pictures on your profile where you can say subscribe to this person, and they're calling it on the internet the stalk this friend book, or a stalk this friend button. Basically, subscribing to somebody means that their Facebook activity will appear in your notifications drop-down window. So everything that they do will be listed on your page, and you can just keep an eye on them there instead of having to go to their page.
Wait, what's the button really called?
It's called subscribe to the friend's name. It'll auto-populate the name. So when you go on Facebook and they've got the picture, and you can say, send them a message, do this, do that.
Okay, I got a question for you, Lindsay, since you bring up Facebook.
Oh, no.
What actually goes into your feed page? It's not everything. If you refresh it, you get different things.
Yeah.
What's going on there? What's the reasoning behind that?
You mean the wall?
Your news feed.
The live feed.
Is not a complete concatenation of all your friends' posts.
Right.
It's some weird ambiguous
You can
thing.
Filter it. You can set up filters, say, oh, I only want to follow these people.
But it's still not everyone.
And it's a group.
It doesn't start off
with everyone. It never starts out with everyone.
By default, it's going to show you what the most popular stuff is. So if people start commenting on something, it'll suddenly show up on your wall unless you click the button. There's something on the upper right that shows most recent, and if you do that, it'll show you everything.
Okay.
And it also prioritizes those friends that you have the most contact with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So what you're saying with this new button, the idea is if you were to go ahead and click on me, Lindsay, on Facebook, and you could see everything I've done, like comments I've made and everything. Anything that I make comments about is on my live feed. This would just move that to your page.
It gives me one place that I can stalk you.
Right. It wouldn't be on your page. It's more on the notifications. So those now they've added those little pop-ups
that come up.
Oh, yeah. So every time you do something, I get told right away.
Creepy. Can you find out who's stalking you? I mean, subscribing to you?
I don't know that yet.
I've got another question for you.
Can you block it?
So we have a GeekSpeak Facebook page, and if you listen to GeekSpeak, please go be a friend to us, right?
Stalk us, please.
We don't post very much on there, but it's fun sometimes to get new updates about things like the ice cream social, which someone should put on the page right now. Ben, you want to do that?
Somebody.
Ben will do it right now. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks for opting me in.
You bet. Opted in. Approved. So then because of that page, everybody kind of, people that listen to the show invite me to be their friend on Facebook. But I kind of have this policy, if I haven't met you in person, I don't accept. So I've got all these pending people. I don't want to ignore them. I don't want to deny them, but I haven't decided to. Are all of you just kind of adding anybody that requests you, or do you have to know them, or what's your rule, Lindsay?
Yeah, no, I really need to know somebody. I've met them face to face before.
You need to have insulted them before?
Exactly. Okay, so I have to have had a sarcastic conversation with
Miles
them.
Would have so many friends. Okay, that's a good
Everyone
rule.
Everyone who listens to Geek Speak can be Miles' friend.
Because he insults everybody. No. Alex, what about you? What's your role on Facebook? Who do you
actually
accept?
Have two different profiles. One where it's all people I actually know in real life, pretty much. I think there might be one or two people where I've known them online for mm-hmm. a long time. And then I have another profile, mostly where I just am doing more with networking with other photography people. And so
okay, that's a good solution.
That one I just have a whole separate profile and kind of maintain a separation.
Wow. Okay. That seems very organized. Al?
Everybody who wants to be my friend, I kind of have had some interaction. The most valuable feature for and Facebook for me is being able to turn off the apps, I don't have to look at everybody's Farmville posts.
Turn off the apps.
There's a little setting in there. If you don't know about this,
you know
can
what
actually
do?
Say, "Don't. I don't want to know about anybody's mafia."
You know,
farms.
Next time you and I have some time, let's go ahead and make a little video on how to do that.
Yeah,
post to the Geek Speak. Everybody wants to know how to do that.
Extremely valuable. Yeah.
It's a little difficult, but not really. You just need a few steps.
Right.
Well, one thing that you can't do is you can't seem, I can't at least find it, how to turn off places notification. So I know everywhere you go, Al, because you always post on Facebook.
Well, I sometimes do, yeah.
Well, sometimes.
Last night I
not
did.
Not when he's doing his assassinations. Those aren't on Facebook.
Okay, fair enough.
There you go.
Are you sure it's me?
Miles, what's your Facebook friending rule?
I have not logged into Facebook since June.
Oh, that's the best one.
I am still composing my tombstone for my account.
So you are going to kill it because you don't like the security?
I'm not going to kill the account. I'm going to leave a note so that people know why I'm not there. But
okay, why aren't you there anymore?
While I feel comfortable with my own ability to protect my...
your data?
My data,
your personal
things like that, my personal life, my personal information. I know what the... how public things are going to be. I don't think that Facebook has done an adequate job with other folks who are not in the computer field.
Yeah.
And I don't want to encourage its use.
You know, one thing I should bring up about Facebook, though, is that if you really think about it, it's actually more secure than most things that you really deal with, like your phone number and stuff like that. Anybody in Nigeria can actually, if they get your phone number, they can call you. Okay, Facebook, even though it's got all these problems, mm-hmm. you can actually make it so somebody can't get a hold of you. I mean, if somebody wants to talk to you, they need your permission. So when you really think of it as a global thing, Facebook permissions is really better than most things we have today. Even though there's flaws, it's better than a lot of things we use.
Yeah, but it's different information. Yeah, you're talking
it's
about
information
stuff.
You control.
And it is not my position that they are evil. It is not my position that they are absolutely bad or that Facebook has no redeeming qualities. It was actually a tough decision for me whether or not to do it or not. I don't think that most people are ready for it.
And you do control what you post, but you also have a lot of other information out there, like who are your friends.
True.
And that's basically then comes down to, well, if you're not going to even link up to friends, then you don't have Facebook.
The issue I have with it is it's opt-in security, not opt-out. You know, you mm-hmm. don't start with a secure Facebook page. You start with an insecure Facebook page, yep. and you have to make it secure. And to do that, you have to be competent enough to do so, or not competent, but you need to know enough about computers to feel comfortable doing that.
Ben, I want to be fair. What's your rule on Facebook friends?
My rule, and I think I've actually slouched on this rule. I'm taking after Miles being a little slacking. But 333 friends.
You can't have more than that?
Yeah.
So anytime you want to add somebody, you have to delete somebody?
Yeah, something like that.
Ouch.
Yeah, I know. But some people I just have to add and then remove quietly 3 months later, you know?
Because you don't get notified when you get removed.
Didn't you do that Burger King thing once where you kill a bunch of friends and you get a free Whopper or something?
No.
I thought you did that.
No,
you just covered
the story.
No, oh, you covered the story. Oh, that's what I was thinking about.
Beast to do that. Hey, at noon, which is only an hour from now, we're going to be down at the Penny Ice Creamery on 913 Cedar Street. They're going to be giving away some ice cream. We're going to be giving away T-shirts. So all the geeks that are in the house today will be down there. We'd love to meet you, shake your hand, take a big group shot, get some T-shirts passed out. These T-shirts are really wonderful. They're designed by Al Luckow, who's a designer. And what does Al do?
I don't know.
He's this famous designer.
I'm just sitting around, actually.
Oh, my gosh. He's right here. The geeks today, Miles Elam.
Good morning.
Ben Jaffe.
Good morning.
Lindsay Lonnie.
I'm here.
Alex Leas.
Hi.
And the wonderful designer, Al Luckow, who has wonderful T-shirts we're going to give them away in about an hour downtown Santa Cruz, 913 Cedar Street at the Penny Ice Creamery. And I do want to thank the Penny Ice Creamery for giving away ice cream today to celebrate as well. Very cool. Very cool indeed. I think we have time for one more news story. And since we just covered the Facebook, well, I don't know where we are, you guys. Right there? Oh, Google Wave. Ben.
Yeah, so we covered a couple weeks ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago, that Google Wave is dying or dead or being basically the plug is being pulled on it, which is really unfortunate, especially one of my friends who pretty much organizes everything that's in his brain goes in his Google Wave. So he's kind of in a, you know. Anyway, Google Wave is now being released in kind of a similar open source way as Etherpad was when it was bought by Google. And it's going to be called Wave in a Box. I just thought that was a very funny, if you're into internet memes, you might get that. So anyway, and it won't be fully featured because, you know, currently it's kind of tied in to a lot of Google services. So basically Google doesn't want you sapping up their bandwidth on a product they don't support anymore. But they are releasing it, and they're actually going to expand upon it, upon the, they said, 200,000 lines of code that they've already open sourced, waveprotocol.org, and they're going to expand upon that before they release it, get a little bit more full-featured and a little more standalone, and then release it out, and people can do with it what they want, deploy it on their own networks.
Put it on your server. Oh, that's very cool. Okay, thank you for that update. Well, since we did the Wave update, and we do have a little bit more time, Alex, it looks like you finally get time to do, oh, wait, yeah. Alex, you finally get time to do the Apple iPhone.
All right. Well, I had mentioned a little while back that we had a vulnerability in the Apple iPhone that led to some jailbreaking. Well, Apple is supposed to be releasing an update pretty soon, I believe to be next week, and they're going to be patching that due to some of how they sign the updates and be able to, or the firmwares, so that you can't go, you know, you can't go back. They stop signing once the older versions, once they get the new versions. I'll put up a link for information about how to basically kind of capture your current version so that if you ever need to, you can go back. If you have problems with it, you can go back. So that way people, say, who jailbreak their phone or who have the carrier unlocked to use another carrier, you can get back to that
state.
Yep.
All right, thank you very much. Well, GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online today with David Lawrence, and we thank the Puppet Master for its use. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Al?
Yes, this is, you know, had a couple of robot stories here today, so I think I'm going to do a USB story that's about robots. This thing is called the Midbot, and what it is you order this sort of a device, and you hook it up to your computer via USB, and it's got little wheels on it, and you're able to control, the computer should be a laptop, you're able to control this laptop through Skype, so you're remote in some other place,
and
you connect to this laptop that's on wheels that has this USB thing plugged into it. And you're able to drive this laptop around using controls that you can access via Skype. It's called the Midbot. It's kind of pricey. Runs on Windows and Vista and XP. It's got a built-in camera. You need to have a USB camera in the device itself, but you're able to just drive this laptop around, you know, watching it via Skype. So I thought that was kind of a robot-ish, USB device.
Turn your laptop into an RC car.
Pretty much, remotely, yes.
From the office, I could answer my door.
Yep.
Awesome. I've always wanted to do that.
And there you have it.
This is GeekSpeak. Al, Miles, Ben, Alex, Lindsay, and my name's Lyle Troxell.